going across Spanish tile roofs. Maria tried to decide if that was a good thing or bad. Night fell, and still no one returned. The gunfire continued. The air overhead was dark with rolling smoke and bright with sparks. Burning clear sacks cartwheeled through the sky, rising on hot winds, candle plastic flickers. Time passed and smoke thickened. She hunkered down with the hyenas, all of them watching the horizon for signs of what was coming for them, the fate they could not avoid.
"You want out of there?"
A shadow moving in the night.
"Toomey?"
He emerged from the darkness, limping. In his hand, a massive revolver gleamed silver. A 44 Magnum. Maria thought she'd never been so glad to see someone in her life.
"What are you doing here?"
"Feeling kind of glad that you're all alone and the vet forgot to lock his front gate on the way out."
He limped to her cage.
"How do we get you out of this?"
"There's a key over there."
Toomey limped to where the vet's muscle had been playing cards. It felt like forever, waiting for him to get back. But a minute later, he had her out and free and was bundling her close.
"Come on," he said.
"We got to get clear of here.
There's fights happening all over. I don't want to get caught in crossfire."
Now that she could see him, he looked like hell. Ragged and exhausted. He had his leg done in a heavy makeshift brace, and his face was drawn with pain.
"Lean on me," she said.
"What happened to your hand?"
"Nothing, it's fine."
She led Toomey outside the compound.
"Hang on."
"What are you doing? Are you crazy?"
She ignored him and ran back into the compound. She grabbed the keys to the hyena's pens. She went and unlocked them. The hyenas perked up at the rattling of the chains as she loosened them. And then she ran. The hyenas were fast.
Santa muerte fucking hell, they were fast.
She heard them hit the fence. The lynx rattled and came loose in ringing cascade. Toomey had his guns up.
"Watch out!"
Maria threw herself through the main gates and Toomey slammed them closed behind her. The gates latched. The hyena slammed into the bars. The iron shivered. Maria leaped back with a cry, shaking.
"You're loco, girl."
"Loca. Estoy loca,"
Maria corrected absently. "If the vet comes back, maybe he gets a surprise." She wrapped her arm around Toomey's waist. "Come on," she said. "Let's go." In every direction, fires blazed. It had even gotten into the hills. She could see the lines of flames racing upward, leaving saguaros burning like brands in the darkness, hundreds of Christs all crucified and flaming, collapsing and becoming part of the larger blaze. Toomey leaned heavily against her. His breathing labored as they made each limping step. Overhead, chopper rotors beat the air, the heavy thwop of intention, moving toward the fires and the crackle of automatic weapons.
"It's like the whole world's burning up," Maria murmured.
"Might could be," Toomey agreed. "They shut down all the cell networks so the Mary Perrys can't get themselves any more organized."
Hills and buildings, the sky itself on fire. Flaming clear sacks and blood rags tumbling through the air, bright orange stars in a smoke-choked sky. This is what hell is like. This was the hell that she'd been warned about when she used to go to church. This was where sinners went. Except it seemed to be swallowing everyone up, not caring that people like her and Toomey were caught up in it just as much as monsters like the vet. They kept on, stumbling through the burning night. Twice they came across roving gangs. Once it was zoners, and Toomey spoke to them, soothing, and they passed on. Once it was Texans, carrying torches and lighting more houses on fire, and Maria convinced them that she and Toomey weren't the ones who deserved payback.
"Between the two of us, we do okay,"
Toomey observed as they crouched in a doorway. The crack and shatter of rifle and pistol fire echoed over the rooftops. More and more places were going up. Maria wiped sweat and soot from her face.
"You think your houses are even there anymore?"
"Guess we'll find out."
Toomey's face was bathed with sweat.
and his features were clenched in a rictus of suffering.
You okay?
I'm fine, little queen, just fine. We should get going.
Maria held him back.
Why'd you come for me?
She asked.
You didn't have to.
Toomey laughed and winced.
Almost didn't.
But you did.
He looked down at the pistol in his hands.
Sometimes you realize that not risking something so you can live is worse than dying.
I want to live, Maria said.
We all want to live, Toomey said.
We got to get out of here.
He laughed.
After this,
he shook his head.
You can bet the Callies and the Nevada Guardies are going to fight even harder to hold the line.
He waved out at the burning city.
This here's a lesson for anyone who's looking.
Nobody's gonna want Texans now, are they?
Toomey hauled himself to his feet.
Can you blame them?
He held out his gun to her.
Here, you need to see this. Hold it. When it shoots, it'll kick.
Why are you showing me this?
He looked at her seriously.
Because if someone comes after us, and it comes down to running, I want you to run.
You'll make it.
But the longer they walked and the more running battles they slid past, the more Maria doubted. The heat of the night and fires was a smothering blanket, and without water, they were walking in a desert. When they finally reached a squatter camp near the friendship pumps, all they found was ash and rubble. All the makeshift housing, all the Red Cross tents, all of it gone. Bodies smoked. The smell of roasted meat clogged the air. Animals picked through the rubble, wild dogs and coyotes tearing at corpses and snarling at one another. Maria and Toomey picked their way over the rubble, trying to see if the pumps were running. Toomey clutched the pistol, pointing it at the packs of animals, and Maria wondered what they'd do if the animals actually came after them. There were too many to shoot them all. Toomey studied the pumps from the edge of the plaza.
I don't think they're running. Electronics probably melted when all this went up.
Maria stared at the dead pumps longingly, wishing she'd thought to bring water from the vet's compound. The dog packs continued to root through the corpses.
We got to get out of Phoenix.
Toomey laughed sadly.
And go where?
North. Cali. Anywhere but here.
How you gonna do that? Vet owns most all the people who know how to wetback it across the Colorado.
He shook his head.
I got nailed that way once already, remember? You'll have people on the lookout for us.
Maybe the vet's dead.
You think?
She didn't. The vet would never die. He was a demon. Him and his hyenas. They'd never die.
Anyway, Toomey said, we're broke. And the price will be up for Texans. People will be even more desperate to get out than before. Price will be sky high. We got to bide our time, raise some cash, and then make a move. Help me up. When we get back to my house, we'll make a plan.
You really think your house is still there?
Maria asked. Toomey laughed darkly.
Hell if I know.
A new flight of helicopters beat the air above them, dark birds against the orange of fires and blowing dust in the sky. Maria watched them pass, hell-bent on some objective that she couldn't guess. Maybe they were firefighting choppers, trying to control the blazes. Or maybe they were National Guard, out to put her people in their place.
I think I'm going to try to cross anyway, she said, without a guide.
You'll die out there.
Maria laughed sharply.
I'm dead here, too. It's just slower, that's all.
An armored personnel carrier sped by. It seemed small and alone in the empty streets, irrelevant in the face of the flames that were filling more and more of the horizon.
So, what, you're just going to hike across 300 miles of desert and swim the Colorado? Even the pros can't get people across all the time.
Like you said, the pros would hand me over to the vet anyway. And if I stick around...
She shrugged.
The vet's probably gonna come out of this stronger. And once he catches wind that I'm still around, he'll definitely come for me again.
You can hide with me, though. We know to be more careful now. We can make it work.
Toomey sounded like her father, promising impossible things because he wanted to believe. And now, as Toomey promised safety and protection, Maria found herself wanting to believe in him too. To believe that somehow she could count on the older, more experienced man to take care of her, to provide for her, to solve her problems for her, just the way she'd pinned her hopes on Papa, and Sarah had pinned her hopes on Mike Rattan.
"We can go together," she offered. "We can both go."
Toomey tapped his leg.
"I don't think I'm up for much hiking or swimming rivers. Your hand doesn't look too good either."
Maria clenched her throbbing hand into a fist, hiding it from his gaze.
"We can find a way."
"Now who's telling pretty stories?"
She fell silent. He squeezed her shoulder.
"At least wait a day or two before you go."
"Why? So you can talk me out of it?"
"No."
He dragged himself upright, grunting.
"I need to show you how to shoot this gun."
Chapter 39.
Angel was with his mother again. She was making tamales, taking corn husks and cornmeal, wrapping them around red shreds of pork. In the background, an old track of Don Omar played, and she was laughing, smiling as she worked, moving to the music, and he was watching, peering over the counter.
"Get a chair," she said. "You can't see from down there."
He climbed up beside her. She showed him how to wrap the cornmeal. He called it corn sushi, and she laughed at that and hugged him. They made corn sushi together while she teased him that maybe he should learn Japanese and go into business if he liked sushi so much. And he'd felt close to her while they waited for his sisters to come home from school. He remembered the heat coming from the pot where she steamed all of the tamales together. He could remember the tile of the counter, could remember everything about it, the smell and the red apron she wore. He was sad because he knew it was only a memory, and she was dead, and Mexico with her, and so were Aya and Selena, and so was Papa. But it was okay, he decided. At least he could be with Mama now. He was safe, and he could smell corn in the air and feel the scald of the steam, could smell the ingredients burning, could smell the smoke. Mama was looking at him strangely. He realized that he was burning. His whole body was burning hot. Mama kept saying, "We need to get you to a doctor." Angel wanted to tell her it was okay. Everything died. She was dead, after all, so why would she worry about him? But she was praying to the Virgin to protect him, and he tried to explain again that there really wasn't anything left to save, that he and the Virgin and Jesus had all made the split a long, long time ago. But she was still down on her knees beside him praying.
"Wake up. Come on, wake up."
She was kissing him, breathing. Angel gasped. He tried to sit up, fell back with pain ripping through him. Lucy sat back on her heels, sweaty and smudged, pretty Jerno looking down on him, his own personal saint. Not a bad way to wake up. Except he hurt. God damn, he hurt. He couldn't move an inch without hurting, and a man was kneeling beside him holding a needle.
"Well, he's not dead yet," the man joked.
"Hold on," Lucy said, gripping Angel's hand. He wanted to tell her that she was hurting his hand with how tight she was squeezing, but the man slid a needle into Angel's skin. Angel went under. The sicario was sitting beside him. They were both sitting on little plastic chairs, keeping company with the body of the man the sicario had killed. Angel knew the sicario was a bad man, and that he was in terrible danger from him. But the man seemed to like Angel's presence, and Angel didn't dare run. The sicario had a bottle of mezcal in his hand, and he used it to gesture at the victim he'd just gunned down.
"That's how I'm going," the sicario said. "Live by the sword, die by the sword, you know?"
He looked at Angel seriously,
Remember that, mijo. We live by the sword and we die by the sword. Make a meal of lead and lead makes a meal of you.
Angel knew the man was Angel's father, under the skin. The sicario was his real father. Not the cop who Angel had fled north with years ago, and who had promised that everything would be okay and that he wasn't someone the narcos would care about. The man who had lost his whole family because he didn't know how to sniff the wind and understand when it had turned against him. The sicario was Angel's real father. This assassin saw the world without delusion.
"I'm going to die by the sword too, but you don't have to," the sicario said. "You go up to El Norte, make another try, no more of this eating by lead." "But what about Mama and Aya? You don't get to take anyone with you, entiendes?"
He shook the bottle warningly.
"Either that or you stay here and you live by the sword and you die by the sword. You go north and live clean. Down here it's too hot for you."
"But I don't live by the sword."
He laughed.
"Don't you worry about that, mijo. You will."
He leaned over with his mezcal bottle and started jabbing Angel's body with its mouth. And everywhere the bottle touched, miraculous holes opened in Angel's flesh. Blood spilled out. Angel stared down at his bullet holes. He wasn't scared. The wounds hurt, but they seemed right to him, as if he'd always been meant to have them.
"I got holes in me," he murmured.
The sicario took a swig of mezcal and laughed.
"So get your woman to sew them up."
"She is sewing me up."
"Not that woman."
The sicario looked exasperated.
"The one who put them there in the first place."
He drank from the bottle, then jabbed it into Angel again, giving him another bullet hole.
"You really are too stupid to live, stupido, dumbo."
Two more jabs, two more bullet holes.
"Your Spanish is bad."
The sicario laughed.
"You've been away so long, how would you know?"
He grinned at Angel.
"You want some advice, mijo? Don't piss off las mujeres. It's better to live in a wasteland than with an angry woman. You know that saying? Deep verdad there, mijo. Don't matter if it's Mexico or Chihuahua cartel or up there in El Norte. A pissed off woman will cut off your balls and leave you singing like a sparrow."
"But I'm not married."
The sicario smiled knowingly.
"All the little gangsters who run around on their girls say that."
He held up an admonishing finger.
"But the girls, they know. They know what you're up to even if they don't say anything. They know. Look what happened to me."
He gestured at his body, and Angel saw that the man, too, was riven with bullet holes.
"You see what my woman did?" the sicario said. "And now they all sing songs about this puta. It was supposed to be my corrido, but they gave it to her, and I get what? A couple verses, and then the bitch does this to me."
He leaned over, gesturing sharply with his bottle.
"And that part in the song where I beat her till she spit blood? Not true. I swear it on my mother. Sure, maybe I got around a little on her, but I never beat her hard."
He shook his head seriously.
"All that was lies for her song."
Angel laughed at his excuses.
"It's a good thing you aren't up north. Women up there, they don't put up with all that shit."
The sicario looked exasperated.
"That's what I'm trying to tell you, mijo. Don't cheat on northern women, they will fuck you up."
Angel looked at him, confused.
"But I only just met her."
The sicario raised his hands heavenward, exasperated.
"He's too stupid to live, skinny mother. I tried to tell him, but I've seen cholobis who got more brains. Let me just shoot him. It'll be better for all of us."
Angel woke with a gasp. Lucy leaned over him, her hand gentle on his brow. His body felt as if it had been run over by a train, leaving nothing but bruised and shredded meat. He was in a half-finished plywood room with exposed studs. A sack of saline hung from a nail in the wall. Beside it, Britney Spears stared out at him from a crinkled poster, Botoxed and toothless, promising granny time. He was roasting in the heat. He tried to throw off the sheet, but just found his own sweat-slick skin. Bullet hole puckers and new sutures. A history of all his mistakes. Someone had been digging in his chest and guts. New stitches pinched his flesh. He remembered years ago lifting his shirt to Catherine Case, the first time they'd met, saying he wasn't afraid of bullets, showing off his scars.
Got a few more now.
He tried to get up, but it was too difficult. He fell back, trembling. Lucy laid a gentle hand on his chest.
Take it easy. You're lucky you're alive.
He tried to speak, finally managed to croak.
Agua.
It was too hard to say more.
Por English. Please, he whispered. Water.
All I've got is clear sacks.
It's good.
She held a bag and straw to his lips, but she took the bag away before he could really get a good drink.
No more?
He asked. As soon as all the organ grafts finish regrowing, you can drink all you want. Angel wanted to argue, but he was too tired, and from the sound of her, she wouldn't bend anyway.
How long I been out?
A week. He nodded, let his eyes close. Memories of dreams plucked at him. The sicario poking him full of bullet holes, grinning maliciously. That evil man and his mezcal bottle, all pissed off about women and loyalty. Angel opened his eyes, staring at the ceiling, thinking on debts and betrayals, assassins and old corridos, songs of violence and revenge. He was alive. A surprise, that. And Lucy was sitting beside him. The woman who'd gotten him shot.
So, he whispered, you kill me, then you...
He swallowed, his throat sticking with dryness.
Then you save me?
Lucy laughed self-consciously.
Guess so.
You're...
He swallowed again.
You some kind of fucked up bitch, you know that?
To his surprise, Lucy laughed harder. And then he started to laugh too, a painful wheezing that hurt so much that he almost stopped breathing, except that it felt so good to be able to laugh at all. He reached out to her.
You're about the best thing I ever woke up to.
Even when you're all shot up?
Especially then.
They regarded each other. Lucy was the one who broke eye contact.
I didn't want to be part of it,
she said. She stood abruptly and began collecting syringes and saline bags and disinfectant packs from around where he lay, suddenly busy, avoiding looking at him.
Part of what?
This, she said, still tidying, still not looking.
Phoenix. She made a wave of her hand. I used to think I could just cover this place and it wouldn't affect me, and then all of a sudden I'm sucked in and I'm part of it. Part of the lies, the betrayals.
A quick, embarrassed glance at Angel.
The murders. I'm part of it. And I didn't even see it coming.
They went after your family, he said. That's powerful pressure.
I thought I was immune.
She laughed bitterly.
I thought I knew this place, and now it turns out that I'm just as wet as when I came down here on my first assignment. I thought it was better than these people, and it turns out I'm the same as all of them.
Everybody breaks, Angel said. You find the right weak spot, everybody breaks.
You'd know.
It's what I do.
He reached out to her, hurting.
Come here a sec.
She looked like a cornered animal, wishing for anything other than to be close to him. But she came closer anyway, knelt beside him. He reached out and took her hand.
Under the right pressure, everyone breaks. You beat someone enough, they talk. You threaten someone enough, they move. You scare someone enough, they sign.
That's not who I am.
Angel gripped her hand tighter.
Nobody would care if you let me die. Might even make you a hero.
He twined his fingers in hers.
I owe you.
No, you don't.
She didn't meet his gaze. He didn't bother arguing the point. Lucy might measure the weight of his debt against her own guilt, but Angel didn't blame her for the betrayal. You didn't judge people for caving under pressure. You judged them for those few times when they were lucky enough to have any choice at all. Lucy had saved him when she could have walked away. If she still felt guilt for her betrayals, well, that was her code. Angel had his own, and his code said that betrayals happened all the time, for small reasons and large. Betrayals. The sicario bitching about his woman putting all that lead in him, warning Angel not to run around on his girl.
"You tell anyone about me?" Angel asked. "That we were working together? Before the Callies leaned on you? You tell anyone at all?"
"You asked that before. I told you I didn't."
"I wouldn't be pissed if you did. I just need the truth."
"I didn't."
"Fucking hell."
"What's wrong?"
"Do you have your truck?"
"Sure. I went back to the Taiyang and got it. I didn't think anyone would be tracking it after."
"That's okay. It's good."
Angel took a deep breath.
"Help me up. I need to get dressed."
"Are you kidding? Your stitches haven't even set. You're still getting growth drips."
"I don't got time for that. Unplug me."
With a groan, he hauled himself upright.
"Are you crazy?" she demanded. "You need to rest. Your lungs have grafts. Your kidneys, too."
"Yeah."
His insides felt like razor blades and rusty gears, hamburger grinding. It hurt, but he made it upright. He sat, panting and trembling, letting the pain wash past.
"You need to slow down."
"Actually, I got to speed up."
He reached for his bloody pants, fighting off scudding blackness and an urge to collapse.
"I think my boss put a hit on me."
Chapter 40. He gave her directions, guiding them through the city to the burned outskirts. To Lucy, Angel looked terrifyingly weak, and the longer he was up and moving, the more she wondered if she was watching a man kill himself. "It still doesn't make any sense," she said as she took another long subdivision curve. They had been driving around the city, passing through burned-out suburbs. Smoke still guttered from the blackened ruins in many places. Stubborn smolders that refused to die. "It was California who put the pressure on me. Last I checked, Nevada and California aren't exactly friends."
"That's what's screwing with me. I kept thinking about something that happened right before I got shot. I tried to use my cash card and it didn't work. Like I was dead already. Like someone deleted me, you know? California couldn't do that."
He laughed darkly.
"But my people could."
He pointed at a new road.
"There, that way, where those ones haven't burned."
"What are we looking for out here?" He gave her a secretive look.
"Answers."
"Seriously? You're going to play cute?"
"Why, you want the exclusive?"
"Do you really care?"
"Okay. Without IDs, I'm dead. I got no cash and no way to cross borders. I'm about as shit out of luck as a Texan. If I surface, someone will come after me, so I got to find a way to get back in with Catherine Case."
"What did you do to piss her off?"
"Had to be Braxton. The motherfucker has it out for me. He put her against me."
At her puzzled look, Angel expanded.
"Head of legal for SNWA.
He shrugged. "We never really got along."
"Enough to put a hit out on you?"
"Well, you know." He shrugged. "I'd have done the same to him if I had a chance. I kept thinking he was playing angles on us. Maybe selling info on the side."
"Even Vegas has moles?"
"Everybody's hedging."
He pointed ahead.
"Here, this is it."
Lucy pulled to a stop, seeing nothing in the abandoned subdivision that distinguished it from any of the others. The recyclers had been at the houses, tearing out all the wiring, some of the timber, even some of the glass. Lucy wondered if Charlene had done the work. It was thorough enough to be one of her jobs. "What is this place?"
"Bolt hole stash. Help me out."
He leaned against her and pointed her into one of the ripped-to-pieces houses.
We put these all over the city, he grunted. For emergencies, in case our people ran into trouble.
How many?
I knew a couple dozen. Probably there are more.
You had Phoenix completely infiltrated, didn't you?
Did our best. Had people taking payoffs in all the city departments. Promised them all kinds of things. Moved their families into Cypress Developments up north. Those were the best informants.
He glanced at Lucy.
Family makes people reliable.
Lucy found she still couldn't meet his eye.
Hey.
He reached out to touch her arm.
I already told you it's not on you.
His voice was surprisingly gentle. The empathy of someone who had been under the control of others and knew how easily a person's ideals could be broken. Lucy felt an almost overwhelming flood of gratitude at the forgiveness in his voice.
That was who Jamie approached, wasn't it?
She asked.
Someone inside his office who was working for you. Some mole of yours.
You'd have to ask either Julio or his guy Vosovich. They're the only ones who know for sure.
Angel knelt slowly, panting, and tugged at a chunk of carpet. It was glued down.
Help me, he wheezed. I'm still a little... not myself.
The carpet came away with a ripping sound, revealing a trapdoor.
It's like a pirate's treasure house.
Hide it under the junk that even junk people don't want.
Angel shrugged.
Plus, there's enough of these around that even if we lose a few, it doesn't matter.
You mean if half of Phoenix burns?
Something like that.
He pried open the door, revealing steep steps descending into darkness.
Help me down.
She went down first and guided him slowly into the basement. He flicked a switch, bathing them in pale light from a few tiny microbulbs.
Batteries still work, he said, sounding relieved.
He's winging it,
Lucy realized as she scanned the stocked shelves and drums of water and bundles of clear sacks. Angel looked so confident that she could be fooled into thinking that he knew what he was doing, but the man was on his last legs, struggling for a chance that, if she was honest and looked at his broken body, was slipping away from him, even as he rifled through the basement's stored equipment. He pulled down a pistol and checked it, started pulling down boxes of bullets and loading magazines, practiced comfortable motions. He dragged a ballistic jacket out of another box, wheezing with effort, tossed it to her.
This one's for you.
Is someone shooting at me?
He glanced back, smiling.
If you're standing next to me, probably.
He pulled out another jacket.
Give me a hand.
He held out an arm.
I can't quite.
She helped him shrug into the bulletproof armor, then did her own inspection of the stocked shelves. There were sealed metal ammo boxes labeled with protein bars and power packs of rehydration supplements. When she cracked one open, it was full. A 50-gallon drum of water sat in the corner. Months of life, maybe more, considering the clear sacks.
It's a prepper's dream down here, she said.
Angel snorted.
Fucking preppers.
You have issues with them?
Just when we pump their wells dry.
He laughed cynically.
Never could figure out why people would think they could survive all on their lonesome like that. All of them sitting in their little bunkers thinking they're going to ride out the apocalypse alone.
Maybe they watch too many old westerns.
Nobody survives on their own.
Angel's vehemence made Lucy suspect he wasn't really talking about preppers. He was going through boxes of medicines, reading labels.
Painkillers, ah.
He popped a couple pills and swallowed them dry.
That's better.
He was almost manic, rifling through the stores. He pulled down a cell phone and cracked open a pack of batteries, charged the phone and dialed. A second later, he was speaking in codes to someone on the other end of the line. Strings of numbers and letters. His voice became distressed. He was smiling at Lucy, but his voice rasped desperation and panic.
I need extraction, he gasped. I'm at Aztec Oasis. Please, hurry, I'm bleeding.
He set the cell phone down.
Come on, he said, grabbing her arm. Time to go.
What are we doing?
Testing a theory.
He dragged her to the steps, gasping, leaned hard on her as they went up. Outside the house, Lucy started for her truck, but Angel yanked her in the opposite direction.
No, not that. Too obvious.
Too obvious for what? But he was already limping down the street.
This is a good house.
Except he passed through the front and out the back, crossed the yard, and lurched across another empty street, before finally stumbling into another house.
This should be good.
He coughed and absently wiped blood from his lungs on his jeans.
Yeah, this is good.
He pointed at stairs. You want to go up?
I need to see.
His eyes were wide, almost mad. Halfway up, he almost fell and Lucy had to catch him. Instead of stopping, he crawled. At the top of the stairs, he went from bedroom to bedroom, gasping, inspecting each one until he found one with an intact window. He stumbled to it and sank down, staring out. His breathing was ragged, eyes wide, glassy with narcotics and pain and effort.
How long has it been? He asked.
Since when?
Since I called.
Maybe 5 minutes?
Come on then,
he grabbed her, dragging her across the room.
Here's good.
The closet? Are you high? For a second, Lucy thought he was trying to screw her, that somehow he'd become so addled on his painkillers that he actually thought he was up for sex. But he wasn't looking at her as he pulled her down. He was staring at the window. He crouched, his breathing ragged. She could hear his damaged chest, the bubbling wheeze of bullet wounds and blood deep in his lungs.
Shh,
he said when she tried to question him again.
Listen,
he whispered.
They're coming. They're coming for me.
He sounded almost reverent.
I don't.
It came first as a whisper, a buzz high above, growing and then suddenly shrieking. The window shattered. Glass and flame showered them. The house rocked. Lucy cowered as scorching air enveloped them. She clutched close to Angel, fire burning against her retinas. Her skin was searing.
What the?
Another wave of heat and shock hit the house. Shrapnel ripped the walls, a fury of flames and destruction. Amid the firestorm, she could just make out Angel. He was smiling, happy, pleased and satisfied as if he had been given a precious gift. She started to get up, but he yanked her down again, pulling his jacket around her. A second strike hit. The blast rained over them.
They like to make sure,
he whispered as he held her. He was smiling. In the orange blaze of the missile strikes, he looked wildly alive, a fervent believer seeing the manifestation of his God. Slowly, her hearing returned. No more missiles fell from the sky. She struggled to her feet and went to the window, her boots crunching over glass shards. 2 streets over, a thick cord of smoke spiraled black into the sky, flicking with fires. Your people really don't like you, she murmured.
Yeah, Angel said. I'm starting to get that feeling.
Chapter 41. They came at dusk to make sure of their kill. Angel closed his eyes, preparing himself as the SUV's tires crunched over glass and the electric whine of the motor died. Doors clicked open and slammed. Men's mutters carried easily as they swept the wreckage with flashlights. Angel nestled deeper in the burned wreckage, hoping that Lucy was up for what he needed from her. When things got ugly, it was hard to tell how a person would act. He'd known desert dogs who hadn't been able to stomach pushing refugees off the border. And he'd seen Nevada guardies choke in a firefight. He'd seen Cholobis deliberately miss rather than take a life. And Lucy had spared him, after all. Footsteps crunched over unstable rubble. Flashlights swept the shattered glass and blackened Spanish tiles.
So what are we looking for?
One of them asked.
Pieces and parts. Yuck. Quit bitching.
2 of them. Angel felt a twinge of relief. 2, he thought he could manage, even in his current broken state.
I want to know why I keep getting the messy jobs. I had to clean Rattan's place, too. You know how hard it is to get brains out of a carpet? You don't scrub bloody carpet, asshole. You rip it out and replace it. Now you tell me. That's why I'm not promoting you.
Help,
Angel moaned.
Help.
Drawing out the word, beckoning.
I'll be goddamned.
The men circled in on him. Bright LED beams speared his eyes. Angel squinted against the glare, reached out to them.
Slow, so slow. A victim, a piece of meat burned and nearly dead.
Looks like our special friend from Vegas.
Angel could imagine what they were seeing. The horror of a burn and missile victim, half buried under soot and Spanish tile rubble. Lucy had lit his hair on fire, melting it to a ragged mass. He'd taken glass and slid it across his forehead, letting blood and ash mingle muddy. The men crouched down beside Angel, playing their lights across his half-buried body.
You sure this is him? He's a bit more fucked up than the last time I saw him, but I got a good look at him in the Taiyang.
You mean when he ditched your ass at the Taiyang?
Motherfucker was resourceful. What can I say?
Squinting against the glare, Angel could just make out their shapes. Two hulking men. Suit coats, ties, a bare glimpse of pistols inside coats. From the comments, he guessed they were the same Callies he'd been playing cat and mouse with at the morgue, then again at the Taiyang. And now they were here, doing dirty work for Catherine Case. The junior man started dragging junk off of Angel while the senior guy squatted beside him.
How you doing there?
He asked soothingly as he ran his hands over Angel's bloodied shirt, patting him down.
You got some papers for us? Or you got 'em stashed somewhere? They're probably burned to a crisp.
Help me,
Angel whispered.
Course, the Cali soothed. No problem, just tell us where you put the papers, and we'll dig you out and run you over to the Red Cross, deal?
Angel let his breath out in a long sigh, and let his eyes roll up into the back of his head.
Shit, we're losing him. Check the rest of him.
Angel let himself be rolled, slipped a hand under sooty rubble. As the senior man leaned down to search beneath him, Angel seized hold of him. Unbalanced, the Cali toppled. Angel grunted in pain as the man landed on him. Blackness nearly swallowed him, but he managed to yank his gun out of the rubble and ram it under the man's chin. Junior went for his own gun.
Freeze!
Lucy shouted. Or I blow your goddamn head off. The man did indeed freeze. Angel couldn't help smiling. Lucy emerged from the shadows, stalking carefully. Angel jammed his gun deep into his own captive's neck.
Got some questions for you, big boy.
Fuck you!
One more word like that and we put a bullet in Junior over there, Angel said. Nice thing about having two of you, I got a spare body to question.
Lucy relieved her captive of his pistol and stepped back quickly, keeping wide of the man's reach. She settled in, watchful, her pistol braced.
Just a couple questions, Angel said. If things go good, maybe we all walk away from this.
Sure, anything you want.
Angel knew the guy was playing for time and hoped the Cali wouldn't realize just how weak he was.
Who are you working for?
You don't know?
Angel didn't like how dark it was getting. He wished his eyes would adjust. It made him feel vulnerable.
Maybe I do, maybe I don't. Maybe I put a bullet in your head when you answer wrong. You working for Case?
A long pause.
Yeah.
Lucy snorted disbelief. Right. She shot Junior in the leg. Junior went down, howling.
Oh, hell.
Senior threw himself away from Angel. Angel barely hung on, feeling as if his guts were tearing open. He rammed his pistol deep into the man's neck, making him gurgle.
Hold still,
he shouted as the man bucked. Senior froze, but Junior made a clumsy lunge for Lucy. Even wounded, he was fast. Lucy smashed her pistol butt down on his head, knocking him to the ground. She knelt on his back and jammed her pistol into the base of his skull. If you move, I will paint your brains on the ground. Angel stopped worrying about whether Lucy could back him up and started worrying whether she was about to go on a killing spree.
Lucy?
Yeah?
You think we can keep them alive?
These fuckers went after my sister. They were going to hurt Stacy and Aunt.
Not these guys, though, Angel said. You know they've done it to someone.
Lucy's voice was so flat that Angel worried there wasn't any way to control the situation.
I need these guys alive, Lucy.
That's fine. I won't kill them if they stop lying. She jammed her pistol against her Callie's skull, driving his face into rubble. Angel could feel his own guy tensing, thinking there was no way to survive. The situation was spinning out of control.
All we want is answers, he said. You'll kill us anyway.
Do you remember when it wasn't like this? Angel asked. When we weren't at each other's throats like this?
That was a long time ago.
Come on, I'm a pawn, you're a pawn. No reason you got to do some sacrifice play for some asshole back in L.A. We're just a bunch of pawns talking right now. No reason we can't all walk away from this, pretend this whole shitstorm never happened. Let's make it businesslike.
What about her?
Lucy?
She didn't answer. Angel wondered what was going on inside her head. How much anger and rage and fear and cathartic need to lash out she had built up in her. How many years had she been down here, looking over her shoulder, watching out for killers like these?
Lucy?
Yeah?
They're just soldiers, he said. Same as me, they do their jobs, get their pay, hope their families get to stay in California. They're just tiny gears in the big machine.
Dangerous gears?
No. He shook his head tiredly. This is just a job to them. Not worth dying for.
He paused.
And maybe someday when they get the drop on me or you, they remember we did them a favor, and we walk out alive instead of ending up buried in the desert.
Finally, Lucy said, Okay, Angel, ask your questions. If they tell the truth, I'll let them walk.
How do we know?
The Callie asked.
Don't push your luck.
But the tenor of her voice had changed, as if her rage was no longer making her choices for her. Angel thought the Callies could hear the change, too, because he felt his man relax.
Can I get my leg?
The junior guy asked. Lucy got off him and stepped back quickly. The man stripped off his jacket and started binding his wound.
Ask your questions.
You're Callies, right?
Sure,
yeah,
the senior guy sighed. Like you said, out of L.A.,
what the hell are you doing out here working for Vegas?
Came down the chain is all I know. We were supposed to comb a house, look for the body of a Vegas water knife, look for some senior water rights papers, and see if maybe we'd get lucky finally. That's it.
Papers?
That brought Angel up short.
Dead trees, that kind of papers?
We're pretty sure. Rattan's computer didn't have anything on it, but we know he did the deal for the rights. Looking back on all his communications, it started to make sense that the documentation was hard copy, not digitalized at all. So yeah, we're looking for paper.
Angel laughed tiredly.
Of course.
He could imagine Civil War-era military guys sitting across the table from the Indians they had destroyed, scratching out agreements and parchment sheaves, each man handing a feather quill pen to the next, dipping the sharp tip in ink. Each man scratching his name on paper. Old paper, for old rights.
I don't got those papers,
Angel said.
Come on, we all saw you bail out of the Taiyang, and we know Rattan had them, even though he was denying it to everyone up and down the chain. We know he was keeping them real close while he tried to double-cross us, except we went over his apartment with a fine-tooth comb, and the only thing missing from it was whatever you had when we saw you leaving so fast. Put two and two together and we got you running off with our rights after you popped Rattan.
No, that wasn't me. I didn't kill Rattan,
Angel said. It was another of our guys trying to make his own play. He thought he'd make himself a pile of money selling those rights off for himself.
Yeah, Rattan was pulling the same shit on us.
He kept telling us he'd been sold forgeries, probably a Phoenix sting operation. And there wasn't even a chance of payback because now the guy was dead in some kind of narco-murder thing. Typical smokescreen bullshit. I mean, sure, we bought it for a little while. It was almost too bizarre not to believe.
but then the story just got a little thin. Too bad, because he used to be a pretty decent guy. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. You were the last guy in his apartment before we got there, so... So now you think I'm pulling the same trick? Making my own score? You are the last man standing.
Fucking hell.
Angel could imagine Catherine Case putting disparate data points together, forming a picture of betrayal. Braxton screwing up things that were too obvious to miss. Added to it, Ellis up in Colorado flipped or dead, not telling her about the dams going down, and then Julio going indie. Lots of things going wrong. Betrayals, lies, and then Angel himself going to ground and telling her that the water rights couldn't be found. He could imagine her back in Vegas, surrounded by her analysts, all of them going over their intel, listening not just to Angel's reports, but also to whatever moles and eavesdropping her people had on Ibis in California. He could imagine her hearing him saying he didn't have the rights. Then California buzzing and pissed off that someone with Angel's exact description had just escaped with their precious rights from the Taiyang. If Julio didn't have the papers, and California didn't have the papers, that left Angel lying to her. It made sense. Case watched patterns. She made decisions because of patterns, and the patterns that had emerged were all about betrayal.
Everyone's hedging these days, Angel muttered.
What's that?
Nothing. Give me your phone. I got to make a call.
The senior guy hesitated, then drew one out under Angel's watchful gaze. Angel rolled away from his captive, getting clear. He dialed with one eye on the Cali. He felt almost lightheaded, knowing at least that this problem could be solved. She answered on the third ring.
This is Case.
Since when are you working with California? Angel asked.
A pause.
Well, Angel, I suppose it was around the time that I realized so many people turn out to be unreliable. If there's one thing I can count on, though, it's that California will protect its own interests. And as long as our interests align, that makes them far more reliable than my own people.
I ain't dead. How's that for reliable?
He could hear a waterfall in the background. She was probably at the SNWA offices, on her office balcony, looking down into the central cooling bore, enjoying the hanging gardens, surrounded by the lush world that she'd created.
I always knew you were one of my best, she said.
I don't have the water rights either.
And that's harder to believe.
Did Braxton put you up to this? Angel asked.
You know that pendejo hates me.
A moment of hesitation. He pressed.
Was it him?
Doesn't matter.
What if I can find you those water rights?
The Callies perked up at that, but Angel ignored them.
What if I bring them to you?
You mean because you have them and you were planning on selling them off the way everyone else who gets hold of them tries to sell them?
Because I'm still working for you, just like I always have.
I wish I could believe that.
You used to trust me.
I trust that everyone is out for themselves these days. That's turning out to be a very reliable assumption.
Not me, though. That's why you sent me down here in the first place. I don't do that.
Catherine Case laughed.
Okay, sure, Angel, for old time's sake. If you hand over those rights, I'm willing to forget the whole thing happened. I'll take the bounty off your head and you can come right back home to Cyprus. We can call it a big misunderstanding.
I can work with that.
Her voice hardened. If they show up in someone else's hands, I'll know it was you, and I swear I'll be right there hunting you along with California and Arizona for the rest of your life.
I get the picture.
He paused.
I don't suppose you could turn my IDs on again. It would help me get the job done.
Would you trust me if I said I would?
Case asked. Angel could hear the smile in her voice.
I've never stopped working for you, he said.
I like you, Angel, but I'm not going to be made a fool. Get me those rights and we'll talk about bringing you back from the dead.
She clicked off. The senior guy chuckled.
Your boss sounds like my boss.
Yeah,
She's not real sentimental. Too bad for you, because if you don't have the rights and we don't have the rights, you're a walking dead man.
No. Angel hauled himself to his feet. I know where they are.
You what?
Lucy and the Callies stared at him, shocked.
Everyone's looking for paper, Angel said. I know where paper is.
Chapter 42. The problem with maps was that they never told you what was really on the ground, Maria thought. When she and Toomey were planning it, it had seemed so simple. They could zoom in and out on the satellite views of the towns that ran along the edge of the Colorado River. Look at the dams. Look at all the waters and where they lay. Look at the reservoirs that were still kept full and those that had been drained and turned back into steep, nearly inaccessible canyons. It was all there for them to look at and plan around, and she'd assembled her equipment carefully. She had the water wings she'd use and the clothes she'd wear that night, made of midnight fabric that she'd used to disappear. She'd thought about how low she'd need to float in the calm waters of the reservoir she crossed, barely above the waterline, cold to infrared scopes. It could be done. She could do it. With Toomey's help, she'd caught a ride out near the border with some Chinese solar engineers who were regulars at his pupusa stand. They thought it was interesting to help a girl make her run at the border. A safe sort of adventure for them to take her along when they went out to inspect the photovoltaic arrays. And it had all worked out so simply that she could almost see herself making it all the way across without a hitch. And then she'd arrived in Carver City and found chaos in the streets, and the far shores of the river glinting with sniper scopes and watching militias. It seemed like half of Nevada and California had turned out to make sure the desperate people of Carver City couldn't make a run for it. The Red Cross tents were full of people getting sick as the town's water systems failed. The city was awash with sewage, and there weren't anywhere near enough Johnny trucks to serve 100,000 people. And now the National Guard had swept in, looking as if they were going to push everyone out any second. At night, Maria crept down to the waters of the reservoir where Carver City perched. The reservoir was low. She made her way down over weathered sandstones and clay soils, shattered magma. She followed a draw deeper down, and in the darkness came across rocks that had been inscribed with lovers' notes and spray-painted markings. Joey and May. Spring break forever. Kilroy was here. Hearts with arrows through them. Funny faces. Except the lake's waterline was still far below her. She realized that people had once boated to these locations and tied up here, marked their summers and vacations and loves, and later the waters had drained below this high point, leaving not just the bathtub ring of water stain around the reservoir, but also this secondary ring of memories and mementos where people had once swum to shore. Maria crept deeper into the gully, scrambling, stubbing her toes. Her shoes were no good. Her hand throbbed, and she was still clumsy with it, trying to use just her few remaining fingers. She got down to the waterline and started to blow up the water wings. They were black as night. She bundled her hair under a kerchief of the same material. Toomey had said this was the stuff. 99% black. It would absorb all light. She would be nothing in the moonlight. She could lie on her back and slowly move across the waters. A turtle, barely surfaced. She picked through her belongings, deciding what to bring and what to leave. The keepers she bundled inside triple layers of old plastic bags, hoping they wouldn't soak through. Cash that Toomey had given her, a few changes of clothes, clear sacks and energy bars, the old heavy paper book that Mike Rattan had given her and that she'd taken on impulse. She weighed the book in her hand. It was heavy, and the swim was far. Really, she should have tried to sell it. Rattan had said she could sell it. Money she could carry, a book she couldn't. She squatted on the banks of the water, looking across. Somewhere over there, people would be waiting for her. People whose job it was to try to catch her. She stared at the distant shore.
They'd be wearing black, too, she thought. They'd try to blend in as well. She squatted down to watch the shore.